It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
This week on Talk About Las Vegas, it's a Red Christmas with world-renowned vibraphonist and drummer Chuck Red, and he's bringing his unmistakable warmth and swing and holiday glow to Vix Las Vegas with a career that includes unforgettable collaborations with Mel Torme, Dizzy Gillespie, and the Charlie Bird Trio. For performances on iconic stages from Carnegie Hall to Birdland, Chuck Red is the embodiment of world-class jazz. And now he's performing at Vix Las Vegas this Friday and Saturday, December 12th and 13th, with two shows each night at 7:45 and 9:15. A Red Christmas captures the magic of the holidays with swing, style, and virtuosity. And for reservations, visit VixLasVegas.com. And to explore Chuck's music and upcoming projects and more, go to Chuck Red, and that's, of course, with two Ds, ChuckRed.com. Follow him on Facebook and X. And a brief reminder to like, share, and subscribe. It really helps the channel, and I appreciate it. And Chuck, welcome to the show.
Nice to see you, Ira. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Something that always stuck in my mind about you, and I think it would work in terms of dates, etc. But did you ever work with, meet, get a chance to talk with Red Norville?
I did. As a matter of fact, he was, of course, pretty old when I first met him. He was, well, he was in his late 70s, I would say, and maybe mid 70s even. To me, seemed very old because I was very young. I was about 22 years old. He came to Washington, D.C., and he played with, I was working with the Charlie Bird Trio, the guitarist Charlie Bird, and Red was a guest of ours. He played for a week with us, and it was fascinating. It was fantastic to get to know him. I drove him all over the place, and he actually even came to my parents' house for dinner. I invited him over. My mother, Delphine, had a reputation for being a wonderful cook, and fed a lot of the jazz community in Washington over the years. So Red said, I'll come on over. And he came over and we had dinner, and he flirted with my grandmother. he gave me a vibraphone lesson. I was playing drums with him at the time, you know, when I was playing with Charlie Bird. That's not too, just to clear up any confusion, there weren't two vibraphone players. But yeah, I got to know him pretty well. It was wonderful. It was kind of touching, a piece of history that went all the way back to the beginning of jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. Did he try to talk you out of maybe taking one of your D's out of your name? So imagine this.
I don't remember that conversation, okay. That's right.
Okay.
He didn't feel the competition. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. So he was an icon, but you had mentors. So you had Barney Kessel, right, as a mentor more than with Red. Red being an idol, of course. And you would have great memories of having him over at your house and having your mom cook and all of that. But tell us a little bit about Barney Kessel and what you learned from him.
I learned so much from Barney about music, just music in general, about how the person you are helps to create, or it actually dictates how you're going to play music. And, you know, it's not about learning something you learn a skill that you can compartmentalize. It's so wrapped up in who you are. And he talked about these kind of things a lot. He talked about the psychology of making music. He had worked on these things very hard over the years for himself as well. He taught me how to be on the road, because I first started traveling with him with the group, The Great Guitars, that included Herb Ellis and Charlie Bird as well. And Barney and I would pal around together when we were on European tours and things like that. And he taught me a lot of tricks about traveling and about how to, by example, he taught me that regardless of how hungry or tired you are, or how many things go wrong during the day, when you hit the stage at 8 o'clock, you give it your all. And he talked about that with me as well. But I loved Barney and learned so much from him. And I still draw inspiration from him as I listen to his recordings.
And you, I think, have an album dedicated to him, Happy All the Time.
That's right. Happy All the Time, a tribute to Barney Castle. The title came from after he had his stroke. He had kind of gotten himself very together before that with therapy and with a lot of soul searching over the years. And even though his speech was affected by the stroke, the first thing he always said when I would call him up after the stroke was he would, to reassure me that he was okay, he'd say, "I'm happy all the time." You know, in other words, I'm not suffering. I'm not depressed. And he demonstrated that. His wife Phyllis took amazing care of him. And Barney still led a good life for quite a few years after he had a stroke. Also, before the stroke, when he was functioning fully and traveling all over the world, you know, nobody is happy 100% of the time, of course, but he was a very positive person. He kind of got up in the morning and decided he's going to feel good and he's going to play from his heart and be honest. And so he set a great example. He really was like a second father or an uncle or something like that to me.
You mentioned he also talked to you about being on the road. And I know with many people I've talked with, performers of all genres, jazz, rock, etc., the hard part is the travel, the stage time is the fun part. And just to be able to come up with techniques and tricks to keep you somewhat sane while you're traveling, whether it's
right.
Car, train, plane, whatever it is. So
right.
that's got to be part of the baggage that you have when you're touring.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, he talked about just the nuts and bolts of traveling, you know, back then, keeping track by writing down, keeping receipts and writing down all of the tax deductible expenses. I witnessed how he would speak to people, you know, how he'd speak to hotel people and airline people. And he would approach them with courtesy and respect. And usually you get better treatment that way. Little things like, and I still to this day do this. If I check a bag, I always travel wearing something that I could wear on my gig, something that looks nice, because they may lose your bag and you want to be able to just show up and play if you don't have time to go out and buy another suit or whatever you're wearing. So he did that. He always dressed nice when he was traveling. And yeah, things like that. We learned, you know, I learned a lot from him. And yeah, and when we were in New York, he had some favorite restaurants he would take me to. Los Angeles, the same thing, Chicago. So I learned a lot about that. And we actually, when we were in Europe, we would go out together and eat so much because we enjoyed each other's company. When everybody else would go take a nap, when we would arrive in a town, say in Italy, we'd go out and have a 2-hour lunch. And so the other guys in the band nicknamed us the Piranha Brothers because we...
That's great.
Yeah.
So he probably of all musical giants and performers had the most impact on you. Would that be a fair statement?
I would say he's right up there. I can mention a few others.
Please do. Another, yes.
Milt Jackson. He, you know, even though I got to know Red Norvo, I later got to know Milt Jackson. Not quite as well as I got to know Red, but I got to know Milt through the years. I saw him a lot. And eventually, I you know, he became familiar with me, and he liked me, and he was a huge inspiration on me, especially in the beginning, in terms of how he played with such soul and feeling and lyricism on the vibes and his blues feeling, and he just was, you know, maybe the most expressive vibraphonist ever, and so. Monty Alexander is another one, and I've worked with Monty over the years. He's a dear friend. I've known Monty since, actually, because I first heard Monty when he did an album with Milt Jackson called Soul Fusion way, way back in the late 70s, and then I went to hear them. So Monty is, you know, one of the most brilliant piano players ever in jazz. I've had the pleasure of working with Monty over the years on both my instruments, drums and vibes. There are a handful of other people. As a drummer, Shelly Mann is one, Philly Joe Jones in the beginning, Buddy Rich. Bill Evans. I listen to Bill Evans at least a little bit every week and sometimes every day, you know, many days in a row. So he's an inspiration. And now I draw a lot of inspiration from younger musicians And I didn't really see this coming when I was in my 20s or 30s. But now, particularly in New York and a couple of people in Los Angeles that are probably a couple of decades younger than me, I go to hear them and they inspire me. And I get to work with some of these people sometime. And there are some true virtuoso musicians that are functioning and touring in jazz these days. And that really energizes me. I love that.
How important is likability in jazz performing? Is that a factor or maybe not a factor, as long as the technique is there and the talent is there? Is there a likability factor when it comes to, especially live performance, not necessarily recordings, obviously, but...
You said likability, like, in other words, how important is it that the audience likes it? Is that what you're talking about?
Likes the performer, correct.
Oh, personally or musically?
Well, I guess both, but I would think that they can enjoy someone musically, but not necessarily care for the person professionally.
Right.
Thinking of some singers I've interviewed over the years that technically are wonderful, but
Well, and that's that is certainly part of a large conversation about the arts is, can you enjoy the art if the artist is not a very good person? And I think usually you can, if you can stay removed from that. You know, there are lots of examples of that kind of thing happening in history with art and entertainment. So I do think, though, you're going to be much more successful if you have good personal skills and if you can get along with people and you can be personable and polite and respectful of your audience. And of course, that also leads to playing music that is accessible. That's one thing I learned from Barney. I remember he said, if you play a couple of songs that people recognize and you get them with that and you draw them in and there's a connection made, then you can invite them to hear possibly an original song or something that's a little more obscure, a little more esoteric. And they're with you on it because you're taking them on a journey and you've earned their trust. So this is how I operate when I perform. I always consider the audience. And of course, there's a fine line between considering the audience and pandering. I don't think I pander. I play from my heart. I play what I want to play, but I try to offer it in a way that's not so self-indulgent that it alienates people. So if people come to VIX on the 12th and
13th, right, just two shows each night,
we're going to play for them. We're going to play for you. If you're listening, come on out to VIX.
Either way.
Pardon?
Or watching, if you're listening or watching, because it's on both.
That's right.
Right, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about, I was going to lead you into that in a little while, but you just mentioned it. So let's talk about the Christmas show. This isn't the first time you've done this at VIX. This is becoming a tradition, or it is a tradition at this point.
I think this is our third Christmas show at VIX, and we titled the show A Red Christmas because for obvious reasons, perhaps, my name is Chuck Red. Also, my brother Robert Red is he's part of this performance. Robert is a wonderful piano player, and the title comes from performances that we've done in the area where we're located, which is the Washington, D.C. area, and we've played at one of the nation's prominent jazz clubs, Blues Alley. It's been there for 60 years, I believe. I believe next year is the 60th year. So we've played at Blues Alley perhaps for 30 years or something like that, every holiday season. And many years ago, our friend who used to be manager there, Chris Ross, he titled that show A Red Christmas. And how could you? That's inevitable, really. So it worked. Well, and we usually pack the house and we have a great time. And then we've been branching out and playing in other parts of the country in recent years. And as I said, a couple of times at VIX, and we had a great time. My friend Pete Barbeauty, the comedian, came the last time we did it last year. I hope Pete will come and visit us. He was for those of us who have been around a while, will remember him from his many, many appearances on The Tonight Show.
Absolutely. Pete's been on this show once or twice as well. Yeah, he's a great performer, and he's still performing.
He sure is. And he actually, he we had him do about 5 minutes or 10 minutes when he was in the front row, and I handed him the mic. I said, Pete, would you have a few things to say? And he went into his thing, which was wonderful. So we always, and a lot of friends drop by, people that, some friends from LA and people that I know in Vegas at this point. I've gotten to know quite a few people there, musicians and people from the Las Vegas Jazz Academy, the young musicians come in. And so anyway, it's just really a fun swinging holiday event. You know, we play, it's very, very straight ahead mainstream jazz, playing a lot of Christmas favorites and integrating those favorites with some jazz standards and some blues and a little bit of bebop and bossa nova. And we kind of try to weave all that together. And we've developed these arrangements over the years. And I should add that we did our very first Christmas recording this past September, and it was literally released yesterday. So I've got a copy right here. I'll show you.
Please do.
There it is.
Raise it higher. There you go.
Okay.
For those who are listening, he's showing us the album. Looks very nice.
Yeah, it's called A Red Christmas. Features my brother Robert and me, and a wonderful rhythm section that we have played with in Washington, D.C. all through the years. I've only released it in CD form at this point, and we will have plenty with us. We are not streaming it quite yet. We're going to start streaming it probably next year. But for now, if you'd like to get a copy, and we'd love for you to have a copy, I'll have approximately 1,500 of them with me when I come to Vegas.
Wow, so that's traveling with equipment and loads of stuff. So, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I may be exaggerating, but okay. No, we'll have lots of copies, and I'll have a nice Sharpie so I can autograph it for you, and so can Robert. So we're just very excited about it. It came out, you know, some of the tunes we do, Winter Wonderland, White Christmas, Silver Bells, merged with Blue Monk, the Thelonious Monk tune, really well.
Right.
God Rest You, Merry Gentlemen, merged with the old jazz standard, I Found a New Baby. And of course, that tune could be a Christmas tune if people thought about it the right way. Maybe. So also My Favorite Things, O Tannenbaum, Santa Baby, Sleigh Ride, and the Christmas song, Mel Torme's Chestnut.
Oh, yes. The Mel Torme classic. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's really, we're excited to have this and to be offering our take on all this music, which we'll be offering up live at VIX.
So you think you can slide in a Hanukkah song in that mix? There?
I should do that. I really should, especially married to a lovely Jewish lady.
So, I'm surprised she hasn't bugged you about that yet. I guess it's up to me too.
Right. Absolutely. We should try to do that. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you could think of it this way. Most of these Christmas songs were written by Jewish gentlemen.
That is so true. Irving Berlin, et cetera. Absolutely.
That's right. Mel Torme. Melvin, his name was Melvin. Melvin Howard Torme.
Yes, his sister was a county commissioner here in Las Vegas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So I was thinking about, you know, you could do a whole other revenue stream for you by hitting secondary markets, but calling it a Chuck Christmas. What do you think?
Let's try that next year.
Yeah. That way you keep the big brand for places like Las Vegas and VIX, and then the other one will be for secondary markets.
I like that. I like that very much. I'm trying to think of some song titles, but
yes. You'll make it work. You'll make it work.
Right.
There's something interesting about jazz performers, and I've talked to a lot of them over the years. Almost to a T, if that's the letter to choose, but almost to a T, they're all down to earth guys. It's amazing how, because I talk to rock performers, I talk to all kinds of performers, but jazz musicians and jazz singers just have this down-to-earth approach to people. And you mentioned earlier how your mentor talked about being nice and polite to airport personnel. And that extends to the audience. You mentioned about the audience. So that probably, courtesy goes to the audience as well. So I'm wondering whether there's just something in the genre that brings that out in performers, or...
I'm going to take a guess. It's because most of us that play jazz music are humble because... It's the music, learning this music is difficult and it never ends. And if you get cocky or if you get overly confident, there's something about the music that will humble you once again. And of course, that's also the beauty of it, because you never stop learning and growing. I practice every day, and I love it. I love that aspect of it. The other thing is, there's not a huge jazz economy. And so therefore, that's another thing that keeps you humble. And I think we need to get along with people, because we need to know and we need to develop relationships with people who will help us make a living, whether that means people that pay admission prices to come and hear us, pay for recordings, or producers, people like that.
Or bookers, even people who book you into various venues.
Bookers, definitely. I remember some older musicians and even some people that are my age kind of think of management and labor, and they make this separation. Well, in our world, I feel like we are all in this together, whether it's you taking your time to interview me and spreading the word and being interested in music and interested in all of this and helping Vix out, whether it's the people, the Loudons that book Vix and bring us in a couple times a year. We're all in this together. It's not an easy way to go. I mean, every concert promoter, festival promoter, executive director that I've worked with, we're all on the same side. We're all trying to make something work. We're all trying to put some music on stage and bring some joy to people. So that's how I've always looked at it. Club owners, I've very rarely been ripped off, or, you know, I harbor no bitterness, you know. We can all tell a few stories.
Yes.
Because when you're doing long enough, something's going to happen. But really, it's very rare that I feel like I've been, you know, cheated or treated less than with respect. So, yeah, I think that's down to earth.
Yeah, that's a great answer. You've played venues, obviously, I mentioned in the opening, Carnegie Hall, Birdland, etc. What would be, in your mind, is unique about playing in Las Vegas? Is it just because it's a tourist destination? But now, of course, we have a very large local population as well. But is there something unique about, from your perspective, Las Vegas?
Well, I think, I don't know if this is imagined or if it's just, or if it's really there, but I feel the history of the entertainment business and the entertainment world in every time I go to Las Vegas. I get excited. And of course, I'm thinking about the incredible recordings that came from there, Live at the Sands, you know,
Sinatra.
And Sinatra, you know. In fact, somewhere I have a video of this on my phone. The very first thing I ever said on stage at Vix on purpose, I grabbed the mic and I said, how did all these people get in my room? But during the intro to Come Fly With Me, and we opened with Come Fly With Me. And most nights when I play there, I open with Come Fly With Me. It'll be different on the holiday show. But anyway, so yeah. I think about that. I also think about, therefore I feel like I'm part of something, you know, I'm part of something, this continuum of this entertainment world that has existed there for all these years, you know, and even today, you know, I mean, there are people like Clint Holmes is there, and people that are tied to the older days of Vegas. I played at the Four Queens when I was in my 20s. I played with Charlie Bird there a number of times when the radio personality Alan Grant was presenting. Remember him? Yeah,
he was Frank Sinatra Jr. performed there.
Did he? Okay. So he was, they're presenting jazz mostly on Monday nights. And that was wonderful and exciting. And once when I was there, we checked in and I saw that Sinatra was playing at the Golden Nugget next door. And it was probably mid afternoon. And I can tell the entire story another time, but I snuck into a Frank Sinatra rehearsal.
That's the best.
Amazing. So I get very excited when I play in Vegas. And the other reason I love Vegas is simply because of Vix, that room. It's really one of the most beautiful jazz rooms in the country, if not the world. It's the right size. They have a beautiful piano. They always get a beautiful vibraphone for me. Great drum set. The stage is the right height. the attendance, you know, they always have good attendance, and the room is about, I think it seats about 125 people. They have a bar area where people can hang out if they don't want to come into the music room, but they pipe the music in there. The food is great. I absolutely love Vic's, and they treat us royally when we come there. So that's something that excites me about being in Vegas. And I also, I have, because of being there and having local musicians and friends come in and making new friends, I've gotten, as you mentioned, or as you alluded to, more of a local, a taste of more of the local community of Las Vegas, not as much the transient tourist feeling there. It was like, I know a lot of people there. So it's great. Really love it.
Of your repertoire, because before I let you go, I wanted to ask you this. Of the Christmas repertoire, is there one song that's a favorite of Chuck Redd?
Okay, so, all right, so.
Because you've recorded this album, which is going to be available at Vic's when you're performing, but is there one song on that album that just, for whatever reason, it could be very personal reasons, and if you don't want to share it, that's fine. I'm just curious if there was one that really appealed to you.
If I didn't make it a personal reason, I'm going to give myself a plug. I have one original on this record.
Okay.
I titled A Red Christmas. And I've been wanting to write a song called A Red Christmas for many years, and it actually could probably have been titled A Blue Christmas because it's a very melancholy sounding song. I'm really happy with how it turned out. I kind of put it right in the middle of the CD line, you know, of a CD programming or a sequence, I should say. So for right now, I'll say that A Red Christmas, my original, is my favorite new Christmas song. But I like all of them. You know, we play Santa Claus is Coming to Town with kind of a little New Orleans funky groove to it. I've spent a lot of time performing in New Orleans. And in fact, I just got back from New Orleans a couple weeks ago. And the day I got back, I tested positive for gumbo.
So, I thought you were going to test positive for beignets. Okay.
That too.
So that goes right to the waist. So
that's New Orleans always has that effect.
Yeah.
I'm fond of everything. When we revisit this music every year, it always puts a smile on our face. And I think it puts a smile on the audience's face.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been world renowned vibraphonist and drummer, of course. Chuck Redd is performing It's a Red Christmas at Vic's Las Vegas this Friday and Saturday, December 12th. And 13th, both nights, with two shows each night, 7:45 and 9 p.m. And for reservations, go to VicksLasVegas.com, VicksLasVegas.com. For everything about Chuck, go to Chuck Redd with two D's, not Red 1D like Red Norvo, two D's with ChuckRedd.com. Follow him on Facebook and X. And Chuck, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ira. You're a wonderful host, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, your next album or appearance, we'll set it up. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey, Las Vegas. Anything you want us to be.